KSL at night.
And welcome back to KSL at Night. You're here with me, Leah Murray, alongside my good friend Greg Skordis, and we're talking about interesting things, which, by the way, Greg, sometimes I get notices from KSL News Radio about the most interesting things via text. Do you?
Yeah, I do. And I signed up for it just the other day. So it's been kind of cool because I get these prompts for breaking news every once in a while. I really like it.
Yeah, I feel you should really be in the know, right? And sometimes that can feel overwhelming because your life is other things. But staying in the know is now easy because KSL's got you covered with updates straight to your phone. Just text the word breaking, B-R-E-A-K-I-N-G, breaking, to 57500, and you'll get all the texts just like we do.
Yep.
All right. So, Greg, you are our legal analyst at KSL. So you get very excited when there's, you know, like a court case.
A big legal case. Yep.
Yeah. And last night we talked a little bit about Chad Daybell and what's happening. So just bring our listeners top of line up to speed.
Okay, so Chad Daybell is the husband of Lori Vallow, who was convicted a year ago for killing her two children, Tylee and JJ. I think everybody knows that. His trial was scheduled for a year later. It's slightly different. He's got an additional homicide case involving his ex-wife, and his case is a capital case, so it's a death penalty case. The jury selection process started this week, and the judge actually set aside 2 weeks for jury selection, thinking it would take a while. Surprisingly, we have a panel to choose from. So they start with several hundred jurors. They're down to about 57, I think. And then Monday, the attorneys get to exercise what are called their peremptory challenges.
All right. So you persuaded me last night, maybe, that there are people on the planet that don't have feelings about Chad Daybell, and that they're going to get a jury that's going to be able to do this without being biased. But I feel like peremptory challenges means they might think there are some people in the room who are biased. Right, Greg?
Well, yeah. Peremptories are really interesting, Leah, because what we do is you get 50 some odd people who you think will be fair. The judge has decided, and both sets of attorneys have decided, this person fits our qualifications. But then you get to deselect. You get to take people off the jury for really any reason you want. Those are called peremptory challenges. And it's sort of a gut feeling sometimes, the attorneys do. You can't, for example, let's say you have a client who is of a certain racial minority. You can't deselect every juror that's of that same persuasion. You know what I mean? So if you have a black client, you just take all the black jurors off if you're a prosecutor, thinking they'll be biased one way or the other. That would be inappropriate. Or even if you have a sex case and you take every woman off in terms of your peremptories. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have to have some level of fairness. But if you take people off, you know, I just don't like the way they were looking at me, or just they've got children about the same age. It makes me uncomfortable. Or they seem to really lean in favor of law and enforcement officers. I'm sort of talking from the defense attorney perspective. Maybe prosecutors, well, this person's got family who've been in trouble. They might be a little more sympathetic, or they don't seem to want to follow the law. You know, so it kind of, it's loosey goosey, and it's we try to overthink it. Well, we've got this great plan. You don't like people with certain jobs, you know, certain jobs that we kind of don't want, but that's all proven to be hocus pocus.
Right. But you all still engage in the hocus pocus. So, Greg, you were saying that the court kind of expected the jury selection to be about 2 weeks, but it went faster. Why do you think that is?
I think the judge was being cautious in giving 2 weeks. Because it's a capital case, it's more difficult to seat a jury. And in this case, you need 12 jurors. And the judge decided that because the trial is going to go for probably 2 or 3 months, he wants 6 alternates in case one gets sick or gets compromised or in any way they can't serve. So we need 18 jurors. So the judge had to pick a panel of 50 some odd so that the attorneys can take off names so that we can get down to that final 18. I think everyone felt, because of what you said at the very beginning, which is how do you get people that don't know anything about this case? The judge, I think, felt that it might take a little longer than it actually did. Probably just being conservative, they got it done in a week. I think we'll have opening statements next week.
All right. So what do you think we'll learn from, you were saying, I feel like yesterday, that you thought opening statements might be as early as Monday. What do you think we'll hear?
Yeah, most likely Tuesday.
Okay.
Because they still have to exercise their peremptories on Monday. That could take a little while. We have a pretty good idea what the state's opening is going to be because we heard it in Lori's. But the attorneys that represented Lori Vallow in their opening said, we don't think the state has enough evidence. And so just sit back, jury, and hear the case. And at the end of the day, you're going to find that there's not enough evidence. That didn't work. So Chad's lawyers have to present a defense. Now, they don't necessarily have to give their opening remarks next week. They can reserve it until they get to their side of the case. But I expect they probably will. And we'll hear that Chad is going to present a defense and what that is, who his witnesses will be. Lori called no witnesses at all. And maybe even a little bit of a hint as to whether or not Chad's going to take the stand himself.
Yeah, so I have a question for you on that, Greg, because I seem to remember... wasn't it the case that Lori Vallow's attorneys, you were a little put off by them last year, I thought, because they were like, how do you represent this woman? Like, they're a little bit, they were...
They seemed a little apologetic right from the outset.
Right, right. So a little bit, do you think that Chad Daybell's attorneys aren't taking that posture? Does that make sense? Like, is he going to get better... You know, Greg scored his kind of bona fide, like, you know, defense. Will you feel better about these attorneys?
You know, and I shouldn't second guess, because I think the attorneys in Lori's case did what they could, but it didn't work. And so I would expect Chad's attorneys can't take that same approach because it didn't work. There is enough evidence. There was enough evidence to persuade the jury. And even though it was a lot of it was circumstantial and sort of people, friends and family and comments that were being made, the jury felt that it was persuasive enough. So I think Chad's lawyers have to take a more aggressive stance, have to call some witnesses, have to rebut their experts, maybe even put Chad on the stand.
Okay. So off the air, you were telling me about some kind of weird motion that was filed last week. What are we talking about?
This is just as strange as it could be. But a lawyer not associated with the case on Friday night at just a few minutes before midnight filed a motion, and it's spelled wrong, but it's a motion to intervene and continue the trial in these proceedings. By the way, motion was spelled wrong, continue was spelled wrong, and trial was spelled wrong. So a motion to intervene and continue the trial in these proceedings. The lawyer filed it. He sent copies of it. So when we do this e-filing now where we have this, you could just plug in, you could file from anywhere you want. It's not like the old days where you had to walk into the court and hand them a piece of paper.
Right.
This lawyer filed this motion to continue the trial and intervene. Really, it's midnight on Friday night before a Monday trial. And he sends copies of it to some lawyers who are not involved in the case. He puts the wrong case number on it. And I think really the judge and the lawyers are like, what's going on? So they immediately convene. The judge files an order sealing the motion. We don't know exactly what it says. The lawyers from both sides agree that that's the way to handle it, that it has to be sealed. Some people did get a copy of it, so it's out there somewhere. But the judge even went so far as to say anyone that has a copy of this motion is precluded from distributing it or talking about it. It's sealed. The judge is not even going to deal with that motion until after this trial's over.
So, pause. Can you file a motion with spelling errors, Greg? I mean, like, doesn't that feel like a min qual on the bar exam? Motion correctly.
Yeah, and I, you know, without reading between the lines too much, a motion filed on a Friday night at 11:45, you have to wonder what's going on with this individual. Okay. You know what I mean? Have you ever, and I don't even answer this question, but you send an email to somebody in the middle of the night and the next morning you wake up and go, what did I do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The motion is so bizarre, so highly inappropriate.
But you don't know what it says. You're not one of the people who got it.
No.
Right. But
you don't file a motion like that. He doesn't have a dog in the fight. It's not even his case. So yeah, there's nothing appropriate about this motion. The misspellings, the way that it was served. He even lists Lori's name as one of the defendants. The judge has specifically ordered, this is not Lori's case. Don't include her name on anything. So there's so many things about this motion that are so wrong. It had to be upsetting to the parties. The judge has done what I think he had to do, which is seal it up, tell everybody not to talk about it. Let's just try the case.
All right. So we'll just keep an eye on that, Greg, and we'll talk about it later. Next up on KSL at Night, housing, obviously, has been a big issue or concern for so many people in Utah and probably all over the world. KSL News Radio's Amy Kobabe has been looking into the housing market in Utah for her conference special. She'll join us after the break.